Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hello and welcome to The Fish Nerds, a show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. Ah, forget all that. Clay Groves here. Coming back from my long summer break. We took the whole summer off podcasting, and I missed you guys so much. But this is kind of just a tease, because we're not coming back weekly until September 1st. Then we've got so much content lined up for you going into the fall for 2021. I can't wait to share it all with you. But I do have a little bit of content trickling in this summer. I've had a really good summer. I'll tell you all about it in our next episode. In this episode, I actually was on the Wet Fly Swing podcast with my friend Dave, and we had a good time. We recorded this, last February, and it just dropped on his feed this week, so I thought I would drop it into your ear holes today, and then in about 11 days from now, a new podcast with brand new content from Fish Nerds will be back into your ears. If you've stayed subscribed to us, we appreciate you. Now the new word on the Apple feed is called a follow. So please keep following the Fish Nerds, and you'll be ready when we drop brand new podcast episodes coming out in the fall. Can't wait to get back on a regular schedule. Been so busy. Anyway, here is the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. WFS, it's called Wet Fly Swing Podcast. And you can find that at wetflyswing.com. Listen.
Everyone, it seems, wants to get more.
Isn't that sexy?
It's up to you and me, girl. Come on.
It's all about spawning. But anyway, we play the sexy music and we have guests on. Last year, we had two other podcasters on who were female podcasters, and we did a quiz show where they had to guess what we were talking about, a sex toy or a fly.
Super excited to have Clay Groves on from the Fish Nerds podcast. Clay is one of the longest running fishing podcasts out there, and a guy who always brings it with some killer crazy stories, and he doesn't disappoint today. So here we go. Let's do this with Clay Groves from Fish Nerds. Happy to introduce the chief executive fish nerd, Clay, from the Fish Nerds podcast. How's it going, Clay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Love that.
So happy to be here. Yes, thank you. Oh, slow down. Calm down. You'll be okay.
That's nice.
I'm very happy to be here. Yeah, I'm taking over, Dave. So
love it. See, that's why if I could just interview all podcasters and all fishing podcasters, I'd be happy.
We have so much fun. I'm so happy to be here. I haven't talked to you in a couple of years.
Yep.
Maybe 3 years now. It's been a long time.
I know. Yeah, I was on your show.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be on my show again, too, because I'm going to flip this and use this on my show as well.
Oh, so sweet.
It'll be a swap cast.
Sweet. All right. Well, I'll do my own promotional stuff. I think I don't have my button set up here, but I'll, add something maybe to mine. Sure. But yeah. So we're talking, we're going to talk trout today, and it sounds like, ice fishing is something that I've never done, and I've heard a lot about, and I'm curious about it, because I want to know, why ice fishing, and if you could compare ice fishing to, say, fishing in Costa Rica, if they're equivalent or if they're a little bit different.
They're precisely the same thing.
All right. Because I'm trying to plan a trip to somewhere down south later this winter, depending on COVID, obviously.
Sure.
But I want to hear about this ice fishing thing. So let's jump into it. But before we get there, just first, the fish nerds. Whenever I hear podcasters or fishing people in that space, your podcast always comes up. Dave Jackson, all these people, the Fish Nerds. So tell us about the Fish Nerds, what it is for somebody who's never been there.
All right. Well, so what we started off, believe it or not, as a quest. We were, my friend Dave and I, who's no longer on the podcast, but we originally started off as writers. We were working on a project. We were trying to catch and eat every kind of freshwater fish in the state of New Hampshire. And that was where it started. And we had almost had a book deal. We had all these magazine articles we were writing. And the book deal fell through because we weren't reaching a larger audience. And they said, why don't you start podcasting? And we did. And we realized that nobody was listening to podcasts either. That didn't help us one bit with our book deal. But we found podcasting to be way more fun than writing. And it turns out there are tons of people who want to talk about all kinds of fishy things. We talk about fish, fishing, and eating fish. And everything is fair game about fish. So we may, one week we might do all really hardcore biology with our fishy science correspondent, Doc Martin. And the next week we might do a cooking segment, and we might do a how-to fish segment, and we do a fish in the news, and we always have a good time. We laugh a lot, and we are almost always true.
Yeah, that's fishing. So you cover a little bit of everything. I mean, obviously ice fishing, you're a guide, and I know I was listening to a recent episode, you were talking about how even in the nasty weather, you were forced out there because there was a paycheck on the end of it. So how is that going? I mean, like, when I think of guiding, I think of like a different thing. Are you like in a tent huddled up next to your client and just breaking out the basics of ice fishing?
I find if you can snuggle with your client at the beginning of a trip, it makes it a much better trip, you know, because you're really intimate that way and you're warm. A typical ice fishing trip, usually my clientele, I don't get a lot of hardcore, like, you know, anglers on an ice fishing trip. My target audience is families. And so we'll bring them out. We don't get up at the butt crack of dawn. Usually we roll out there on 10 in the morning and we snowmobile out to a nice shack. We maybe go inside for a minute. I don't like people inside. Outside's where the action is. And ice fishing has become a very high tech sport. And this is why I like it. You know, like it requires, we have sonars, we have GPSs, our augers are made of steel that you can only get from the Highland Mountains, you know, or Norway. And like, there's really specialized equipment. And I like all that high tech stuff. And so I'll drill before the clients arrive. I will drill 20 or 30 holes, right, Lance? And I'll kind of identify where the fish are. And the reason way I do that is I drop a sonar in the water and I can see fish are there. And I like to start them where the fish live. And I'll start clients catching small fish, yellow perch and dinky things, just to get them used to catching fish. And then we move on to bigger game. And there's a lot of different, it depends what they want to fish with. They're trout fishing. It's a whole different thing. Maybe we should start there.
Yeah. First of all, just sonar and breaking that out, I'm realizing, okay, the $300 for a guide is well worth the money because most people aren't going to break out sonar and know exactly where the fish are, right?
If you have a family of four and you step on the ice with me, you are walking on the ice with $3,000 worth of equipment the second you walk on the ice. So yeah, and I'm not using higher end stuff. I can't afford that, but it's still expensive.
Cool. So trout fish. So you have, I think you mentioned brook trout, lake trout. Yeah.
So yeah, let's talk brook trout. So brook trout fishing actually is a very different game. I'm gonna start there. This is the simplest of all ice fishing, and it's probably the most fun. And the season for this, even though it's open all ice fishing season, typically the bite for this fish is only great for the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season. And the way what the New Hampshire does is, I don't know about most states, but New Hampshire raises their own trout stocking programs. And do you know what broodstock?
Yeah.
Trout are? Okay. So people who don't know, broodstock are the grandparent fish. They're the fish that are in the hatchery for 4 or 5 years, who are making all the babies. That's your giant. It's your cows. It's the ones doing all the work. They get paid to reproduce over and over and over again. Well, every year they take, you know, thousands of these broodstock and they put them into the water for anglers to catch. And they're trophy sized fish. These are brook trout that are 18 inches long. They're huge fish, and they're beautiful. And so they drop them into a bunch of ponds and lakes and rivers around here. And when they freeze over, you can go target them. And by the way, you can target them before people are fly fishing for them right now. And in the spots I like to fish are super shallow, sandy lakes that have a drop off
for ice fishing.
For ice fishing, yeah, and the typical. And so what I do is I walk out in the ice, and this is the only time I bring clients out on thin ice, because the season wraps up when the ice gets thick. And so typically, safe ice is 4 inches or thicker. But on this trip, and I tell the clients ahead of time, this is what's going to happen, is we're going to go out on ice that's 2 inches thick. That's not safe ice. Dangerous ice. But we're fishing in water that's 1 foot deep. So when you fall through, not if you fall through, when you fall through, you just step there back up on the ice again.
That's better.
Yeah, big deal. But here's why it's so cool. We each person gets one fishing rod. We don't use traps or anything like that. And we take a little ice fishing fly, usually just a little beadhead nymph with some hot pink on it. Whatever, I don't care what kind it is. As long as it has hot pink, that's my color. 2 pound test line. You can use, tip it material if that's what you got, but really thin line. And you walk out and you punch a hole in the ice with a drill or you chip it out with a chisel. And you can, the water's crystal clear. New Hampshire waters are very clear waters. And you can see the bottom. It's just sandy. Just there's sand, there's water, and there's ice. And it's you standing right on top of it. And you just jig right in that hole. And you watch your jig bounce up and down. And you sing songs and you make it bounce. And you wait a few minutes. And then you'll notice once in a while, you'll see the sand kind of blow past the hole. And that's a fish is nearby. So you keep jigging and jigging and jigging. And you notice that that's happening more and more. And then all of a sudden, like a herd of sheep, these giant fish are coming in chasing your jig. And then what I try to tell clients to do is play keep away. Don't let the first fish have it. Right? Because you want two or three fish getting really aggressive chasing it. Now you're fishing. Now you're fishing on top of these fish. You're at a foot of water. These fish are literally 3 inches from your feet. And they can see you, but they don't care because they're cows. They're hatchery fish. And so if the ice is clear, it's amazing because they're swimming and there's usually 15 or 20 of them swimming under your feet and you're jigging around and they're swiping at your bait and they've got terrible aim because they're not trained hunters. They're pellet eaters. So it takes a bunch of tries for them to catch your food. But when you hook them, they're huge. There's, these 18 inch fish and you pull them out of the water, you take a picture.
So how do you get them once you hook them? Because couldn't they just go under the ice further and kind of shave your stuff?
That's exactly right. They could. And you're on thin ice, which would be sharper because it's, that thin profile. So using 2 pound test, make sure you drag a set right when you hook it. And if they start running, you want to dip your rod tip in the water so that your line's not scraping the ice.
Wow.
Yeah.
This sounds amazing.
It's so much fun.
This is not your normal. So I pictured ice fishing. I should have watched it. Is there a video on this that you're talking about?
I could send you some stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to get a link to see because this just sounds amazing. This is not like sitting in a tent, which is the old picture of ice fishing, right? Where you're freezing your butt off.
We share that too.
Okay. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, for sure. You do. Yeah.
What about when you took your clients out recently? From your last podcast, you mentioned you took them out and, or maybe it wasn't the last one, but there was one you're talking about ice fishing and it was cold as and you were like, you would not have gone if it was just your personal day, but since you were making money on it, you went. Take us to that moment.
This was a couple of years ago, actually. It was in December.
Oh, okay.
And we had, so right now, by the way, to kind of bring it to where we are now, 2020, December, what is it? The 11th of December.
Yeah.
I don't have any ice yet. I can't ice fish yet.
Oh, wow. But, like global warming?
I don't know. Cause it sometimes, occasionally happens, it just, the temperature doesn't work out. But
okay.
2 years ago, we had a subarctic freeze in December. We had sub-zero temperatures for 2 weeks. So we had ice that we've never seen before. It dropped down to negative 20 for 4 days in a row. And it was insanely cold. And we gained all this ice. So I put my shack out early and I had clients who wanted to go out fishing. And it was the day they wanted to go out fishing. And I was new at the game. So it's my second year ice guiding. I called the clients before. I said, listen, it's going to be negative 16 when you get up in the morning with 30 mile an hour wind. Do you want your money back? I'll just give you money back. And they're like, no, we booked a hotel room. We're in. I'm like, oh, Christ. All right.
Damn.
All right, I'll be out there. So I get all bundled up. I drive the snowmobile out there. The snowmobile barely starts. The gas is frozen, kind of cold. I pick them up at our spot. I drive them to the ice shack. And, here's the problem with fishing in an ice shack. It's warm inside. My ice shack is I have an actual camper on the ice. It's 75 degrees inside there.
Like a camper, on the back of your pickup camper?
Yeah, like a pop-up, like a tent trailer that pop up into a camp.
Oh, yeah.
I tore all the tenting out and built walls and put a heater in and holes in the floor. So I put them in there to keep them warm. I fire up the heat. We're doing great. But it's when it's that cold, you're under a super high pressure system and the fish don't do much. They just sit in one spot under the ice. And fish don't typically stay under an ice fishing shack. I don't care how many signs I put down there say, hey, I'll be fishing at 10 a.m. the fish don't typically stay put. They move around a lot. So if you want to catch a lot of fish ice fishing, just like you would any other kind of fishing, you don't pick, like when you're fly fishing, you wouldn't pick a six-inch spot of river and cast that same spot all day long, would you?
No, I wouldn't, but I would say, I was going to note this earlier, you're talking about not euro nymphing, but the pink, right? I did a recent post on euro nymphing, which is, that's competitive fly fishing. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that, but there's a Team USA, actually a team, but they are stuck on these little tiny sections of river and they're competing. So they've got really good at being good at fishing water not great. And you know, the funny thing is they say the number one thing they use is a fly with a hot spot, pink, like you said, or red or something like that. So you're doing well there, but no, I hear you. I mean, I think you want to move around. And so you're stuck on a piece of ice. And my other question too, as you're going, is this is the stupid question in me, but how do you not melt the ice with your 70 degrees shack on top?
First of all, the shack's on a trailer on wheels, so you're already
gotcha.
Off the ice.
I see.
But you can make a fire right on top of the ice and not melt the ice. Heat rises, so it's not typically a problem.
Gotcha. Okay.
You might melt some of the snow, you know. So we're in there fishing, and I'm trying to get them to come outside and fish. So I'm drilling a bunch of holes, and I'm jigging around. And I'm catching fish outside, and I'm bringing them to the door. I'm like, I got a crappie, you know, I got a bass. And they're like, yeah, we're not coming out. And so I'm out there fishing. I set a few fish traps I don't usually do. Flag pops up. I'm like, there's a fish on the trap out there. You want to come pull him out of the water? And he's like, yeah, no, you caught that one. We didn't catch that one. I'm like, that's the game. That's what we do. That's why you hired a guy.
Right.
And they didn't catch anything for hours and hours and hours. And it's just getting colder and colder out. And finally, the guy hooks a bass, and it's massive. The drag is screaming out of the reel, and he's fighting, and the bass isn't moving at all. And then I made the biggest blunder of all time. I reached down, and I just tightened his drag just a little bit, and then pink, gone.
Yep.
Gone. His only good fish the whole day. They end up only making it about 2.5 hours of a 6-hour trip.
Oh, wow.
And even inside, it was starting to like, it was warm in there, but it was, you're sitting in that heat of a propane stove. It was just uncomfortable and no fun. I cooked them lunch, fed them a hot meal. I have a grill outside. I got frostbite that day.
No kidding.
And I drove back to their car, sent them on their way. They never came back. They're not repeat clients. They didn't have a good time. And so what I learned as a guide is, if I know for sure the clients are not going to have a good time, end the trip, give the money back, whatever it takes. Because if they don't have a good time, they're going to tell their friends they have a good time. They're not going to be repeat customers. You might make $300 or whatever it is, but there's no value in the end of that if you can't make more money later. And so now what I do is, if it's sub-zero windy, I call it unsafe, which it is. You can die in that. You can die in that minute.
Yeah, 16 is crazy. That means -16 seems like, wow, that is intense.
Yeah, especially with the wind.
Oh, and the wind, which makes it probably, like negative 40.
There was 35-mile-an-hour winds out all morning. So now I don't go out in that kind of weather with clients. Now, even on my own, I rarely bother. Like, there's so many days where it's 25 degrees, sunny, and no wind that you can have a great time ice fishing. You don't have to kill yourself in that sub-zero stuff.
No.
And
okay.
Especially you don't need to ruin a client's day.
God, okay. That's a good, that takes us a good perspective on it. So let's talk about just ice fishing gear. Let's talk about what you mentioned, some things you need. But if you're going out there, say I was going out there on my own, I don't know if people do this. If I'm just like, I got family up in the area and I'm like, you know what? I want to go ice fishing. So what do I need? What are the basics?
The very hardest thing about ice fishing is making a hole in the ice. Right. So you need some sort of a chisel or an auger. A chisel is only going to do you any good in the first month of the season, maybe the first 2 weeks. And then you can chisel out a hole in the ice. But once the ice is, a foot thick, which happens usually by January, chiseling out a hole to fish in will take you all day and you just wreck yourself with it. So a chisel is okay, but an auger is better. And there's gas augers, which I don't use. There's hand augers, which are fine. And then the auger I use attaches to a DeWalt drill. And so I can just drill dozens of holes that way. What I find when I was first starting ice fishing, this is my recommendation for anyone who's new at it. go get a six pack of beer and go to Walmart or wherever you buy your independent tackle shops and buy your one little ice fishing rod and grab your favorite jigs. Even if it's flies, you can like nymphs work great. It's like bead heads. They have to stink. We don't fish with lead in New Hampshire. I recommend anyone anywhere. Don't fish with lead. That's awful. Stop it. If you're using lead, I don't care if it's law or not. Don't do it.
Tungsten.
That's my thing.
Tungsten.
Tungsten is great for ice fishing. In fact, a little tungsten jig for ice fishing is wonderful. And have you know those little cush balls the kids have that have all the hairy little rubber strings on them?
Not really, no.
So there's little balls. They sell them at the dollar store.
Okay.
And they're called cush balls, and they've got rubber strings on them. You can use those as bait.
Oh, wow.
Or you can grab a microfiber mop and tie a mop fly onto your tungsten jig, and those crush it for everything. They're great.
Nice.
I use those all summer, too.
Okay.
Mop flies are amazing. I can't believe people hate them.
Wow.
I'm sure you could do a whole show on that, on how people hate flies.
So are you using bait? So you're not using bait necessarily.
I use bait sometimes. But typically I use soft plastics, or I'll use a fly, or tiny bucktails that we tie.
Oh yeah. Cool.
Or my partner, business partner, Vinny ties them. I don't tie anything.
Yeah. So are you the rod you're using, are you using like a typical spin rod?
I use a little spinning rod. Yeah. But, I actually have a couple spinning rods that have fly reels on them that I use for ice fishing too, because that inline reel of a fly rod is actually better for ice fishing because there's no line memory.
Oh,
so typically a spinning rod, you have that kind of sideways spool. And you get memory.
This is amazing. This is almost, it's almost a fly fishing episode we're doing here, right? It's ice fishing, but I didn't realize there was so much of the fly in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, lots of people fish, and we use all kinds of stuff, too. It's not just that, but since it's a fly fishing show I'm on, I figured I'd talk about the fly part. So all you really need is a jigging rod, some sort of hook with that weighs something. So that's why, you know, the beadhead nymphs or the little tungsten jig with something tied on it. Is all you need, and a hole in the ice. And the reason the six pack of beer is important, this is how I learned to ice fish. The very first time I ever ice fished, I moved to New Hampshire about 26 years ago. And I was driving around the northern part of the state, and I always wanted to try ice fishing, and I knew anything about it. So I saw a guy out fishing on a lake called Squam Lake, and he was out by himself, old guy, catching fish and dropping perch on the ice. So I went to the local store and I bought a six pack of Bud Light, which I don't like, but cheap. So I grabbed that and I walk out on the ice and I put that six pack down next to the dude. And I said, "Can you show me how to do this?" And he didn't say a word. He leaned down, cracked a beer, handed me his rod. And he took another rod out, and I was sitting next to him on a bucket, jigging next to him. And he, without almost ever talking to me at all, he went through three beers. And I ended up catching my first yellow perch through the ice.
Nice.
And then I was like, "Oh, this is cool."
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of like.
That's cool.
Got my taste for it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I spent years trying to figure out how to ice fish. I did the typical classic ice fishing. The traditional ice fishing is trap setting. And I don't know if you've ever seen an ice fishing trap, but it's like a pair of wooden. It's a wooden X with a post in the middle. The X keeps the post in the water. There's a spool under the water with a trigger and a flag on top. And when the fish bites, you put bait on it, you lower it down to the depth you want it. Usually it's a minnow. And then when a fish eats it, the flag pops up. You yell flag, you run across the ice, you grab the string, and you pull it in by hand.
Oh, man, that sounds pretty fun, too.
It can be. Each angler can set, in New Hampshire, if it's not trout waters, can set six traps.
I'm picturing this again. I'm picturing guys out there. There's like a load of beer cans just laying all over the place. Guys are, half wasted. Also, the flag goes up, and it's a mad scramble over there, drunken scramble. Is that kind of something?
It's kind of a thing, yeah. And the reason that happens is because typically nothing happens.
Exactly. You go all day, and then all of a sudden, boom, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, where I guide, I don't use those traps very often. We jig because I want the clients actively catching fish. And so I had a family of four out, and we were fishing pretty hard. They're probably in the 2.5 hours with them, they probably had 25 white perch, which we were targeting that day. And another family was on the ice with us, and the other family had set six traps per person. So six times four people, what's that, 24 traps they had on the ice. And they caught zero fish in the time that we loaded up almost with our limit on white perch. And we were doing is we were fishing each hole for 4 or 5 minutes and moving like you would anywhere else. You don't spin. And what they did is they set the traps. And once you set those traps, you're stuck in that spot. You're not moving. It's too much work. You know, because these traps can take you 5 minutes to set up, and then you got to pick it up afterwards. It's just pain that I hate them.
Yeah, so, totally.
I don't like fishing. I do like chasing flags. Like if someone else sets the traps for me, I'm happy to go pull a fish out of the water. I don't like setting them up, but I definitely, at the end of the day, so I when I first started guiding, I would set traps for people. So there, at the end of the day, I'd be picking up 30 ice fishing traps. It's sunsetting. It's, you know, 12 Ooh. Degrees out. It's breezy. Yeah, to reach in the water, you got to reel this line, hand reel it onto the spools, put it away so it's not all tangled. Nightmare. And you're, it's awful. So I've invested in sonars for my clients, and they're just, they're very traditional, sonars. They're
is there a model or something you can look
at? Yeah. I mean, I'm not a brand person, but I like the Humminbird, but a lot of people love, a lot of people like Markham. A lot of people love, Vexlars, but they're all the same.
They do the same thing. There's not a bad. You can't get one that just doesn't give you good information. They're all pretty good.
No, you can spend more on more dialed in stuff. You know, you can spend anywhere from $300 to $3,000 on garbage, but and then digital ones now, which are even more expensive. But I like these really simple ones. Humminbird I like because the screen is so big, so easy to read. But what is it? They're an analog machine. They're not digital at all. So you put the sonar in the water. It pings the transducer in the water. It pings the bottom, and it reads it on a screen that has a spinning light in a box. And that spinning light will change colors. And once you learn to read the colors, you can read the depth, and you can tell if there's fish are there. And the really cool thing is, you can see your bait. So you can have a 1/16th ounce tungsten jig with a little piece of plastic on it, and you can see that as it goes down. And then you'll see other lines on the screen that are the fish. And then all you have to do is find out what that fish wants you to do to make a bite. So you see you dance a little bit, and you see the fish react because it's moving up towards it. And when they hit it, you set the hook and reel a fish in. And it's way fun. And I find like 10-year-old girls, my daughters especially, they can read that screen so fast and so well and catch so many fish, and like better than I can. And there's something about girls, they have a touch for it. Same sexist, but I find girls out ice fishing boys like 2 to 1.
There you go.
I don't know why.
I think just in general, women are better at, because same thing with fly fishing. I think they're typically better at stuff than men. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know if
they're smarter than us probably.
I think there's something about it. There's some truth to that for sure. Because fly tying, for example, that's another one that they're very good at, and I don't know exactly what it is, but no, that's cool, man. And yeah, so I've got you, that's right, you have 10 and two daughters?
Two daughters, yeah, they're now 13 and 11.
Oh, 13, 11, that's right. So I'm at, I've got almost 9 and 6-year-old daughters.
Oh, so you're two daughters as well?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
We're like twins.
Yeah, we're total twins. Yeah, this is amazing. we're gonna have to hook up and do some ice fishing.
Oh man, if you ever get to New Hampshire, I'd love to take you out.
I'd love to get out there. Like I said,
where do you live?
So I'm out on the other side, Portland, Oregon.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So
we're way out.
Way
out. It's like 6:30 in the morning for you out there.
Yeah, this is a little bit earlier, but I love this is great because I get a podcast in, and then it gets me a head start on the day, and you know what I mean. So
and as a fisher, getting up early is no big deal.
No, I love getting up early. That's my struggle is that I'm actually an early riser and a late. I go to bed late, so it's like I'm probably killing myself sometimes. I'm sure I am, but I love it.
If my wife would tolerate it, I would go to bed at 8 o'clock every night.
No kidding.
I wake up at 4 o'clock every day.
Oh wow! Yep.
Can't sleep past 4. I don't know what's
going on. You can't do a go to bed at midnight, wake up at 4.
No, I do that too. Yep. I can't sleep past 4, no matter what it is.
Oh wow!
So if I do stay up late, I still get up stupid early.
Oh, there you go. See, that's where we're different. Is I could sleep in not till like 10, like when I was a teenager, but I could sleep in for sure in the morning. I love sleeping in. So
Well,
let's get back to the gear really quick.
What are we talking about?
I want to make sure we don't miss. I want to make sure we don't miss this gear. So what you're saying is, I could get a drill, something to drill into the ice, bring my fishing rod, just my flies, and pretty much that's all I need to catch a fish.
It's all you need. Yeah.
So no tent. No. You don't really. So you can just forget about the tent.
Well, it depends on how hard. So if you just want a taste of ice fishing, don't spend a lot of money at first. know, find a way to make a hole in the ice, pick a day that's not going to kill you to be out in the weather and go fishing, right? You can, I do use fishing tents. We love them. I have a couple of portables. They're insulated, and on those cold days, having a tent with a Mr. Heater or whatever in them is wonderful. You know, I've got an Eskimo, which I really like. I have clam stuff, which I don't like as much. The zippers always break on my clam stuff, so I'm not a big proponent of clam tents right now. I burnt through them too fast. But I mean, they're nice. A lot of people love them, so I don't want to disparage any brands, and especially if they want to sponsor me. I don't care about brands. What you want to do is if you are going to do a lot, you do want a way to get out of the weather. But you can get out of the weather with good clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't necessarily need a tent. You need to be warm and dry. And the Norwegians say there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothes. And so layer up, no cotton. Your feet are probably the most important part of ice fishing. So you want waterproof boots. You want wool socks. You want layers and layers and layers.
What boots do you like?
I use muck boots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mucks are all. It's like insulated, like those full hardcore.
Yeah, they're winter. I use the chore boots, too. I don't care because, again, I'm going to wear warm socks. So what I need to be is dry. And I'll put, if it's really cold out, I'll stick in the toe warmers and that sort of thing. And then layers. My ice fishing bibs are a float suit. So for safety, if you want to be safe, you can spend a lot of money on clothes that are buoyant. So you can't sink if you fall through the ice.
So it's like a dry suit?
No, it looks like snow pants. But it's called a float suit. And if you fall in, you float. Yeah, it's not a, you know, not a PFD, not a life jacket, but it because it's not, won't pass the Coast Guard test.
Oh, gotcha. That's the one thing for me being like a weenie Western, you know, I'm thinking about the ice fishing. It's like, man, that's scary to me. Thinking like falling in through the ice and now you're trying to not die, right? I mean, how often do you ever hear of people falling through the ice?
Every year. And I did a show on this a few years ago. Gosh, I couldn't put a date on it anymore. But a few years ago, I wasn't fishing. I was actually at a meeting in town, and the meeting happened to be on a pond. And it came out at 9 o'clock at night, and there was a guy on the ice screaming. And it turned out there was a guy who was crossing the pond. He fell through because this pond he was on was actually a damn river. And I tried to rescue him. I fell through trying to rescue him. And by the time the fire department got him, I self-rescued myself, but he did not make it.
Jeez.
So I was with him. I was the last person to talk to him when he died.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So I take ice safety very seriously. So if it's not, I don't take clients out on unsafe ice unless it's a foot of water. So if there's any question about safety at all, the trip is over. It's done. We don't do it. In fact, last year, this happened to me in the springtime. The spot we were fishing, it happened to be in March, and we were fishing ice that was 2 feet thick. And the temperature spiked to 70 degrees while we were fishing.
Jeez.
Which is delightful. You're getting a sunburn, you're in a t-shirt and all that stuff. But what happens is on the shallow water on the edges, it turns to slushy. The material feels like, you know the slushy machine, slushies you eat?
Yep.
The ice on the edge turns to that during the course of the day because the sand warms up and it heats from the bottom.
Mm.
And so at the end of the day, it was about an hour before the day was over. I was walking back to my truck to go get, I probably had to pee or something, but to go get something. And I fell through, I fell through shallow water ice.
Yeah.
And this is the sound it makes. Shh. That's it. That's because it's not breaking and cracking. You're just through. And so I fell through. It was only waist deep.
Yeah.
I got myself out. I went and found a big plank and put it on the ice, and I announced to the clients, your trip's over. I gave them half their money back, you know, because I ended their trip early. I said, it's for safety reasons. We got them off the ice, and Vinny and I, my partner, while we were unloading it, we had to go back on the ice and get all of our gear.
Oh, wow.
And we each fell through 3 or 4 times getting our gear off the ice. But luckily, it was shallow water. But as soon as you know it's not safe, your job as a guide is get those clients to safety. So before we dealt with our gear, we got them off the ice. And then we dealt with all the gear.
Gotcha.
But we were wearing float suits. I mean, nothing going to happen. It's also 70 degrees out. So when you get out of the water, you take your pants off in the sun and you're fine.
Wow. Okay.
But midwinter, like there's no danger. Like it's biggest danger with ice fishing is getting cut on an auger or slips and falls. So
that's it. Yeah. Yeah. So I can see you hit your head on that ice.
Oh my God.
You're hurting.
Yeah, we have, you know, we have micro spikes that we keep, and we wear those. And
oh, you do? Yeah. You screw in spikes to your studs, to your boots.
Yeah, and we encourage the clients to do something for their shoes, too. We don't typically supply them to the clients because we don't always get them back. We learned right away that if you give some client something to put on their shoe, when they leave, it's still on their shoe.
Oh, wow. Are you just out there and then all of a sudden like a crazy guy with his truck is driving across, skidding across the ice? Are you getting cars?
Oh, sure. And one time I was, this is great. You'll love this story. I went out, I wasn't guiding. I went out ice fishing on my own, on a pond. Nobody was fishing this pond. It was like, there was a foot of snow. I had to drag, it was before I had a snowmobile. I had to drag my gear out. I set up a little tent, sitting in there jigging. I caught a couple of yellow perch. I pulled out a big pickerel and had a good time. And then I look out the window and there's a tractor on the ice with a giant blade, you know, like a road grading tractor.
Jeez.
This is a huge tractor. There's no joke around, like road, like road making tractor. And they all around in a figure eight shape, they carved this road on the ice with this big blade. And by the way, I'm in the middle of one of the circles in the figure eight fishing.
Oh my God.
So right around.
So he's doing it around you.
Yeah. So then he pulls off the ice. I'm sitting inside fishing, having a good time still. And then a bunch of trucks pull up and a bunch of dirt bikes get out.
Oh my God.
And they had a dirt bike, like a rally on the ice around.
Really? And they didn't, did they like wave at you or stop by and say, hey, we're going to do a rally?
Nope. Not one word. And it was like a dozen motorcycles on the ice.
That's unbelievable.
Around. Yeah, I got
wow.
fish that day. The water, you can in the ice fishing hole, it's just, the water's rumbling. You know, it's just boiling out of the ice fishing hole. It was fun.
Oh, my gosh. All right, well, that's another good story. I was going to ask you a couple of crazy stories. This is the good thing. I haven't even had to bring it up. They're just coming naturally.
On Lake Winnipesaukee, I was fishing once during the ice fishing derby. I don't fish derbies because I don't like catching kill derbies. So that's ice fishing derbies are typically killing fish shows. But I like to go out to the spectacle and interview people. So I was fishing that derby. During the derby once and talking to people, and I was sitting on the ice and that little airplane comes and lands next to me on the ice. And the guy climbs out of the side of the plane. He drills a hole in the ice and sits on the stairs and fishes right there. Next to his airplane. And
that's cool.
Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire, our biggest lake in the state, is the only FAA approved airport on ice. There actually is an airport on that lake too. That's a full on.
No kidding.
With traffic control and everything airport. Yeah.
Cool. Well, what before we get out of here, I want to check just on, I'm not sure if you're like a historian as far as ice fishing, but there must be a long history there. Do you know any of that? And I mean, it must be, people have been ice fishing for as long as they've been alive, right?
Oh, I imagine. I mean, as soon as people realized you can make a hole in the ice, I'm sure they did. I know for sure, like the Algonquin Indians, I don't know the right words, but I know the Algonquins would ship holes in the ice and fish, and you know that the Inuit people also did that. So, and I imagine all across Europe, anywhere there's ice, there's a history of ice fishing. But I haven't researched it much. I've seen examples of ice fishing hooks from the day, but I haven't done any real research on it. Usually bone hooks. Yeah, typically. They're designed to make the fish swallow. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking.
They don't catch and release back in the day.
No, exactly. So, you do. So, you do a lot of catch and release.
I do mostly catch. I would say 80 to 90%. And to be honest, though, like I do that most of the year, I release almost every fish. If I'm going to eat fish, typically it's ice fishing where I'll eat them. So, like if I want to fish fry, I usually eat more fish in the winter than I do in the summer. And if I'm going to, I'm usually targeting a fish that's pretty invasive, like a white perch, and where you can catch like 20 of them and have big fish fry. But I am going to, my first, when the lake freezes this year, I am going to eat my first brook trout catch of the season.
Yeah.
Which I don't typically do, but I'm, for Christmas this year, I have a bunch of cedar planks I got for nothing and I make my own maple syrup. So this year for Christmas, people are going to get a couple of maple planks and a little jar of syrup. Ooh. And a recipe for maple planked salmon or trout.
That sounds amazing.
And they'll be able to take the planks and that syrup I gave them and go to the store and buy a fish or catch their own fish and cook a fish using what I give. And that's what I'm doing for Christmas this year for
people.
Nice
work. That's perfect. That's perfect.
And because I'm cheap.
No, that's not cheap. I'll tell you what, syrup is expensive. Right.
Yeah, but it comes out of the trees in my yard.
Oh my gosh, you guys have you have some cool. That's back at the start, right? The comparison between you and Costa Rica. You guys have some good stuff going there, even though it's a little cold. It's
a little bit.
Yeah, it's still good to go. And okay, well, hey, before we get out, I just want to check. You know, obviously, you have a guiding service, so if people were out in your neck of woods, they could check in with you. Is there any other, you know, resources, or if somebody wanted to follow up and learn more about ice fishing, or you know, regardless of where that is, that you would send them? Do you have anything on your site or anything else?
Yeah, there's not a lot on my site. Although now you've hit on something that's a hole in my world where I should do that. But what I mean, Facebook has lots of groups dedicated to ice fishing. And if you're in a region that has it, I'm sure your state has ice fishing. There's like for New Hampshire, there's a bunch of sites called like Ice Fish NH or New Hampshire Ice Fishing. There's also like Ice Junkies is a big one. I don't live anywhere near Minnesota, but Minnesota's got so many lakes and so many people ice fishing. I follow their pages, their groups on Facebook. I'm a member of a lot of their groups because I can learn a lot. There's also a lot of jerks in those groups who know more than anybody and will just troll you to death. So you have to have a thick skin. So be able to tolerate asking a question that you know is kind of dumb, but you need the answer to. If people are going to go, that's dumb. And you know the type of people.
So have you heard of Lake of the Woods ice fish? Is that a popular,
yes.
Seems like maybe that's the first name that comes out when people hear the word ice fishing. Is that something special?
Yeah, that's a huge Midwest. I don't know much about it. I know people who go there and fish every year, yeah. And I don't care.
Yeah, totally. Not a big deal.
So that's my problem. I don't care about stuff. I like fishing, but I'm not like I don't think anyone's fishing is better than someone else's fishing.
So there's not a destination spot for ice fishing that you just have to go to somewhere in the world.
Well, no, that's not true, because I would love to go. I would love to go to Alaska and catch burbot.
Burbot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have them in New Hampshire, but they don't typically get giant here. Now, for people who don't know, burbot are the only freshwater example of a codfish. So, and they in the summer they go through what's called estivation. Do you know what that means?
No, I don't.
I'm going to teach you something.
Yeah.
All right. Estivation is like hibernation, but you do it in warm weather.
Oh, right.
So they will typically in the summer will burrow down the mud and barely move from like April until about November. And then as the lakes start freezing, these fish get really, really active. And they look like, people call them eel pouts in some parts of the country. They look like a hybrid catfish and eel. Like they're just gross looking big fish. And they can get to 30, 40 pounds in some states like Alaska. And they live only in the northern hemisphere. And only in deep glacial lakes. For typically, they've been dropped in other waters, but that's typically where they live. And you can only catch them mostly in the wintertime through the ice. And they just get so big, and they taste like cod. So
there's
this huge, this monster fish you can only get a little bit of time a year, and they're really cool. So I like to do more burbot fishing, but somewhere that has big ones.
Yeah, perfect, like Alaska. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, Clay. Well, I guess that's about it. Do you want to leave us with a maybe in the next few months, any strange things you want to have upcoming for you? Anything weird that's you
well,
can just
leave? Yeah, so coming up in January. So we do it once a year. We on the Fish Nerds podcast, we like eating fish. We like talking about eating fish. And we do a tinned fish special. We call it the Tinned Fish Challenge, where we will go buy some canned fish. Some taste great. And some we have no idea what we're getting into. And we do a big show where we eat tinned fish and laugh and tell stories about the tinned fish we're eating. And that's a lot of fun. That's coming up in January.
Oh, nice.
We do we have the Fish Nerds Book Club, where we're this month we are reviewing The Feather Thief. So that's our book club this month. That's a fly fishing book if you want to keep up there. We've had John Gierek on the show twice.
That's amazing. You had him on twice. I saw that.
Sorry, Gierek.
Gierek.
Excuse me. Yeah, don't be fancy fly fishers. Correct me too much.
He's the rock star. He is one of the rock stars. Well, for writers, he is the rock star. And you've had him on twice. That's awesome.
Twice. Yeah, I even got him on a computer the very most recent time. So that was a win.
There you go.
During the COVID lockdown, when he couldn't go on a book tour, he was like, all right, I've come on your show.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
Yeah. Have you had him on your show?
Yeah, I did. Yep. Had him on way back. I can't remember what episode, but it was a long time ago. And he was amazing. Yeah, he described this story of flying out of Alaska, and he was in on this river with this crazy float plane pilot, and he was 100% sure they were going to crash. And then the pilot banked it left at the last minute and pulled it out, and it was like no big deal.
But, that's so scary.
Yeah, but Gierek is I love his stuff for sure. So.
Yeah, he's great, and we have all kinds of fun. We have our fish scientist Doc Martin coming back. We do We talk about some fish biology. So we have all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah. We talk about fishing and we make fart jokes too. So it's the whole thing.
Nice. Nice. Well, we're going to have to keep in touch now that we got the, I got the second podcast now.
And our Valentine's special.
Oh, wow.
So every year I do this special, a sexy fish special, and I play this music.
Uh-huh.
Listen.
Everyone, it seems, wants to get more fish in the
Isn't that sexy?
World.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like the Beatles.
It's up to you and me, girl. Come on.
Come on. Wow. It's all about spawning. But anyway, we play the sexy music, and we have guests on. Last year, we had two other podcasters on who were female podcasters, and we did a quiz show where they had to guess what we were talking about, a sex toy or a fly.
Oh, no kidding.
That was. And this year, there's a woman named Reba Sparrow who makes a podcast called The Mystery Box. It's a sexy, it's a sex story podcast where people tell their sex stories. She's going to come on the show for a Valentine's special, and we're going to do crazy fish sex, things fish do to get laid. And she's going to come on as a co-host and make the human comparison to crazy humans.
There you go.
So we have all, we're everything.
Yeah. You got tons of crazy. Yeah. That was the easy answer for you. Okay,
that's all we do.
That's awesome.
We talk about fly fishing too. We do have a fly fishing correspondent.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Rich Collins is our fly fishing correspondent, and we do talk fly fishing too.
Oh, cool.
Usually make fun of him, but yeah.
Where's Rich out of?
He's in New Hampshire.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You guys are, that's right. Okay, cool. Well, I'll link out to, you know, everything we talked about here today and we'll keep in touch with you. This is going to be awesome to, see all these, I'm not sure, man, you got so many crazy events. It's like, I have to pick one. I think maybe the Valentine's Day sounds pretty interesting.
That is so much fun. I get so uncomfortable too. Like, it's so outside of my comfort zone, and that's why it's so much fun. I always have female guests on because I don't know the rules. And they always go places I won't ever go to a woman ever.
That's what you want, totally. What's the podcasting? Just before we leave, like, you know, obviously it's a ton of work. What do you love most, or you know, and why do you still do the podcast? Are you doing it weekly?
I do it weekly. Although in November I did it daily because it was National Podcast Posting Month. I do it weekly. I've been doing it weekly since 2011. I think we are one of the oldest fishing shows.
Yeah. Wow. 2011. So you've got me by 6 years at least.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm the grandfather of fishing podcasts.
You are. So what keeps you going? Why do you still do it? And when are you gonna quit?
I don't know. My wife would like me to quit, but audience interaction, the fact that people are listening and they care. If I skip a week, I get messages and people are going, "Where's my show?" And when we do something really interesting, people respond to it. It's interaction. We have a Facebook group that's very active And we get all of our ideas, a lot of ideas right from there. And I do it because it's fun. It's like, you know, it's another hobby. It's creating art, you know, and if people don't, you know, some people paint, some people write, some people sculpt, and some people create audio. And that's just as much art as anything else. Yeah. And that's how I create.
So, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Awesome. All right, Clay, well, I'll let you get out here and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all links and everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/240. 240. We are still doing some live podcasts as time allows. You can go to wetflyswing.com/live and find out what we have going. So far, we're still on Clubhouse, but there's a bunch of opportunities coming up here. So stay tuned for that and check us out and see what we have going here. That's pretty much it. That's a wrap today. I want to thank Clay again for putting together this great show and holding, hanging in there with me. It's been good. Always looking forward to mixing it up. So looking forward to maybe seeing you soon, maybe catching you online or on the river.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com. And if you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes.